Hello, my name is Charlotte Minnick and I'm a student project manager at the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues at Dickinson College. I'm joined today by Elaine McMillian Sheldon, filmmaker and director of King Cole. An Academy Award nominated and Emmy and Peabody winning documentary filmmaker, Elaine is known for intimate portrayals of Appalachian, rural, and Southern life. Her most recent film, King Cole, can be described as a lyrical tapestry of a place and people, which meditates on the complex history and future of the coal industry, the communities it has shaped, and the myths it has created. Through breaking the boundaries of conventional documentary filmmaking, King Cole transports viewers to Central Appalachia, where coal is not just a resource, but a way of life. She is visiting Dickinson College for a Clark Forum program titled, A Conversation on the Making of the Film, King Cole, and she is joining me today for an interview. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I would like to start off by asking, how did you get into the world of storytelling and why did you choose creating documentaries as your medium?
I grew up in a community where I wasn't really surrounded by artists. I grew up in the coal fields. Certainly people were probably practicing their own form of art, but it's not known as a urban center with galleries or lots of cool cinemas or anything like that. So I actually just grew up wanting to tell stories of any shape or form. And so I loved to write as a kid, and I really loved photography and drawing. And so I kind of thought I wanted to be a writer. That was sort of my dream because I could see that in action in my community at a local newspaper. And I thought that would be a really cool way to spend your life, is sort of just in the lives of other people through journalism. So I went to journalism school at WVU, West Virginia University. And I sort of pretty early on in my journalism experience felt the limits of journalism, in the sense that I wanted to spend more time with the people I was telling stories about, and I wasn't always granted that time in the sort of news pace that was required of me. And so I discovered long form video, which in the early days just meant sort of like a 10-minute documentary, and then it turned into a feature length documentary. So I like stories because I'm interested in other people's ways of navigating the world, and I'm interested in the subtle ways people talk and the things they do, and just interested in other people. So I've never been really one to like super be drawn to making fiction. I've always been inspired by the things around me. Yeah, although my parents would say I was a really good liar as a kid, so they would argue I have told many fictional stories as a child.
Where did your inspiration for a more unconventional form of documentary filmmaking come from?
Well, it didn't come, my desire to do something unconventional did not come at the beginning of my career. I spent a decade making very sort of strict verite observational films where I did not meddle at all. Like, it was a matter of, if my husband and I, we worked together, he's a cinematographer, and we always said, like, if you miss it, it's your fault. Like, you don't ask people to do things again. And we really had that working philosophy. It took a lot of pride in being able to know how to be in the right place at the right time and find the right people to tell the story that was scene-based, that you actually as an audience could see things playing out. And it wasn't just sitting someone down for an interview and then getting B-roll that sort of exhibits what they said, but it was actually showing what it means, and showing how, like, beautiful or tragic or whatever that actually looks like in real life. So that was how I first really honed my interest and craft and skill. But certain stories call for certain devices and techniques, and King Cole called for things that I had never done before, including telling my own personal story, including narration and writing that narration and actually speaking that narration, including things like leaning on poetry and folklore and fables and dance and sound design in ways to really want to expand my idea of nonfiction cinema.
Regarding your research process before filming, what were you able to take from your own life growing up in West Virginia versus what required more external research?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a documentary filmmaker, you have to constantly be doing both. You have to do the really wide, understand the landscape of what's going on. You need the facts and figures, because when you're talking to individuals in the field, like, even if it doesn't make it in the film, it builds trust that you know what's going on. Like, you can't go in ignorant and just expect people to figure out the details for you. You have to know everything, but you also have to know how to be really in touch with the intimate, small, personal details that aren't in the headlines, that you can't just find through a Google search. And so that really just comes from knowing and like lived experience. And so it was a matter of always keeping up with the news about what was happening and also knowing what's happening in the coal communities and what's sort of the temperature check politically and economically, but also like being more reflective on what it was like to grow up as a kid there and really talking to my mom and other folks just to sort of mind my own memories of things maybe that I had forgotten, or even casting two young girls to play these central roles, which is a very traditional documentary thing to do. They're not actors, they're dancers, and they weren't scripted, but they are put in scenes to just be as they are. Those girls were really meant for me to sort of be a mirror, to sort of allow me to write what did it mean to be a kid in this place and ask questions about what it means to be today. So it's just sort of this zooming in and zooming out effect you constantly have to do.
You started the process of creating King Coal before the COVID-19 pandemic. How did the transition in and out of the quarantine affect production and your creative process?
Well, COVID-19 killed some of the things that you see in the film. So in the sense that like the places and things that people gathered to do were traditions they had been doing for 50 years. And because they were largely put on by the older generation, COVID was sort of the death knell. Like they didn't come back after 2 years of being gone. And so I really feel like the film in and of itself documents a pre-COVID way of belonging and getting together. But it also, in a good way, made us pause production for obvious safety reasons, but it ended up benefiting, I think, us creatively because it required me to take a step back and actually rethink the film as being more than just a documentation and like, what else could it be? And that's when writing became a part of this and that's when the girls became a part of it. And it was really like, I don't think without COVID, without sort of pausing, I would have had the time to really think about what is the film I want to make and why is it unique from other films that have already been made and how do we make it stand apart.
On the same note, what lessons did you learn from that COVID time period that you've taken with you in your work?
I think the need to slow down. I'm a detail-oriented spreadsheet-like worker bee filmmaker. I'm not, you know, I don't think until King Coal I really embraced the artistic side of documentary. I saw nonfiction as an extension of journalism, cinematic journalism, and I think it still has very much a role in that space. But COVID made me really reflect on how I was limiting my own definition of documentary, because when you can't be with other people, and it felt really, I'm thinking back on it now, like I actually haven't thought about this. I think COVID actually kind of shook me to the core, because my entire career has been spending time with people in close quarters. And it was really scary. Like I was like, when will we ever be able to be back in close quarters with people? Like this was my life, like riding along with fire and police. This was my life, was like being in small spaces with people, and that was just not going to happen. And it felt very strange. And so it made me rethink how to tell stories without that. And then luckily we were able to go back to that in a safe way. But it really made me appreciate the slowing down, because I'm just like a go, 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 go person. And I think I've brought that to other projects since I've made space of that hasn't been forced upon me by a pandemic to actually think about what I'm doing rather than just constantly doing.
The film seems to hang in a fragile place between celebration, mourning, and moving on. Was it difficult to find the balance between different perspectives and stakeholders? For example, pro-environment versus pro-coal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that unfortunately, like any pro-coal or pro-environment position, while it is useful in a particular fight, has to omit some realities to make their argument. And the film wanted to make space for all the realities and the fact that they contradict each other and they're both still true. Like we can say that coal brought a lot of pride to communities and changed people's lives. And we can also say it made the water unusable and the land destroyed. Like those two things are used usually to negate one another, but they both can be true. And so the film was a balancing act of trying to exhibit what a civil dialogue looks like, which is us creating a space, a film space where we open the invitation for many opinions to be a part of it, but no opinions that were dismissive or shamed. We wanted to stay away from that of either side. So yeah, it was a real balancing act of figuring out where to push, where to pull, where to put pressure, and where to ask questions rather than provide answers. The film really asks more questions than it answers, and that was intentional.
How did you approach community members to hear their stories when you weren't sure what their reaction to the film was going to be?
Yeah, I think it's true for any documentary. You don't really know what you're making along the way because it's not a scripted film, and you just have to be really transparent with people. These are your intentions. Also be transparent with people. This is what you're not making. So we always said this was a film about coal culture. Like I didn't know anything other than that. Like I knew I wanted to document coal culture. So I could say that, and I could say, but it's not a film about your politics. It's not a film just about this one side or that side. And I knew I could hold to those truths to the end no matter what film I was making. But I really didn't know what it was going to look like. And certainly when I was, you know, gaining trust and getting access to certain places in the first pre-COVID days, like I could not say there's going to be two girls at the center of it. They weren't even part of my thinking. So you have to make space for your film idea to grow and your artistic ideas to be able to grow, but you also have to honor and respect the things that you're telling people. So there's like a central, you're basically communicating the central heart, the value system, and not sort of depending on the like bells and whistles of the film to tell the story, right? Like as long as the film is still true to its core, that it's documenting coal culture and that it's respecting the people that are depicted in it, then it doesn't matter how you end up telling the story, it's that you stay true to those things. I mean, it really helps too. I grew up in the coal fields. I still live in West Virginia. I lived in Tennessee partly while making it and also lived in West Virginia, but you know, still live in the region. So, and people know my work, not everyone, but a lot of people have been making work about Appalachia for a while. And so they already trust me at some level. So that helps a ton as well.
As a native to Central Appalachia, was there a scene that transcended the camera and specifically stuck with you?
Yeah. I mean, the final scene is a memorial that we hold for King Cole, which sounds very strange, but it was an idea of how do we end this film? And I wanted to end the film not with like showing a energy transition. Like I think some in the hands of some filmmakers, this film would show, okay, we move from coal to wind turbines or solar, or like there's a like a green energy transition that we're all hoping for, right? That would be an easy solution. Or maybe we end with some type of like timely bite of information that just like gives people like, okay, this is where they are. But I wanted to end with kind of an off the wall idea, which was that the message of like the whole film's been about documenting rituals around coal. So what does it look like to create a new one? And so with the King Cole Memorial, we did that. And what's really amazing about that scene that most people don't know is that it's not scripted, because we invited a bunch of people, 70 to 80 people, told them to wear black and told them to carry a casket up to the top of a mountain and then give their eulogies to King Cole, a story, not a person. King Cole's not a person. It's saying goodbye to a story that no longer holds people together. And the eulogies weren't scripted, so the final one that's given is given by a woman named Heather Hanna. I'd never met her before that day. She wrote her eulogy 10 minutes before we walked up the hill, and as she's giving it on the top of the hill, I'm like literally crying behind the camera, because it's like everything I've been working on for the past 3 years is now being finished. It's like the end of the film was being written by this woman I had just met that day. And so for me, that really transcended the idea of like, I'm making a film, but I'm also creating an experience for people that is not just for the film, but is actually deeply meaningful for them. They're contributing to it in a way that means something to them beyond just the cameras rolling. And I'd never had that experience before with a documentary, because mostly you're a passive observer trying to fly on the wall, get out of the way. I've never created a space for a story to happen. And it really was pretty incredible. I don't think I could ever really recreate that again. It's probably a once in a lifetime experience to be able to like make a film, invite a bunch of strangers you've never met to the top of the hill, and they finish your film for you. It was pretty interesting.
When showing the film across the country, you visited Appalachian communities. Did the reactions to the film differ greatly in those screenings from others?
I think Appalachians get the film like on a deep, deep, deep emotional level. They see themselves in these girls as kids running through the woods. They see the heartbreak and they feel Like, I've said things that they don't really feel permission to say. Certainly, like, there's parts of the film that make them uncomfortable, and there's parts of the film that make them really happy. And but from an outside point of view, I think the biggest thing I get is, like, this is not the film I expected to see. Most people expect to see some, like, takedown of the coal industry. And then when they don't, they're either delighted and, like, surprised to know that West Virginia isn't ugly and is beautiful, or they're mad that it wasn't a takedown of the industry. So, you know, it can't be a film for everybody. But Appalachians, they're, I mean, I've had people come up to me after screenings that said, I moved back to West Virginia after I saw this film. Like, that's how much it's not just my story, right? It's so many people's story. And that feels like a huge win when other people can watch a film. You're the narrator, you're talking about your life, but it's not about you. Like, I think that that's pretty wonderful, because a lot of personal documentaries can get really navel-gazy, and it's like, why am I watching this? I don't need to see this. And luckily, due to my incredible collaborators who helped me write and rethink, and we were able to make a film that, like, people, no matter their age, gender, where they grew up in the region, if they've left, they see that film, they know exactly what I'm saying. And those people always say to me, like, I no longer will try to explain Appalachia to anybody. I'm just going to tell them to watch this film, because, like, I can't explain it better than you show it. So many people have said, like, I've not had a reference point up until this point to show people why this place has a hold over me, but I can't go back, or why I want to go back. So I like that the film shows in Germany or, you know, the Netherlands, but I think the most meaningful reactions are the people that have connections to the place. They see it and they feel it speaks to something they've felt.
Since the filming of King Coal, are there any updates from the communities portrayed in the film regarding tradition or the place of coal in daily lives?
It's a good question. I think the pageant is up and running again, because it took a year off after COVID. The girls are 14, 15 years old now, which is insane. They were like 10 and 11 when we filmed, and they're taller than me, and they're still living out their dreams of wanting to be dancers, and they both run track and are just really smart, awesome kids. Gabby still wants to be an actor and a dancer, and I think Lainey still wants to be a dancer. Fred Powers, the man who gives the talk in the classroom, he actually passed away due to COVID, so we lost him before we had even finished the film, and his wife was able to see the film, and she actually took part in the final scene. She came. You know, it's like a constantly, the Coalfields is like a constant heartbreak after another. There's floods that have recently made it worse for a lot of coal communities. Mines have opened and closed. There's now hiring billboards for new mines that will be open for maybe 6 months and they'll close again. But it just feels like not a lot changes real quickly, but the quiet fight is still going on, and, like, still to this day, people are on the ground in the coal fields trying to make it a better place for people to live.
And my last question is, can you tell us anything about what projects we can look for in the future from you?
I'm working on a film about energy again, but not about just coal. It's about looking at the fact that energy demand is going to double over the next decade in the U.S. And we're looking at energy infrastructure and grid and people that work in the power industries across all forms of energy. So, yeah, it's a film about labor in the time of, like, increased power needs due to AI and automation. So hopefully that'll be done in a couple years.
This concludes our interview. On behalf of the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues, thank you for sitting down and having this conversation with me.
Thank you. Appreciate it.